You know who you are?
Steven is my name.
Even Steven.
Will you say something, Steven?
Steven or Else Media.
The following episode will contain the names of people and places set in the fictional world of the Hyborian Age. Furthermore, if I am unable to find these names spoken aloud on YouTube or in an audiobook, they are names that I will certainly pronounce incorrectly in almost every single instance. Listener discretion is advised. Conan and Bortai explore the ancient ruins of the fabled lost city of Kara-Shur. There they encounter a bevy of bothersome bandits. They discover a brilliantly blue bauble, and they stumble upon a bone-chillingly brutal, beastly behemoth. What's a fellow like Conan to do when faced with such odds? Well, that's coming up next right here on Hither Came Conan. Welcome to Hither Came Conan, the podcast that's treading the jeweled thrones of Hyboria beneath its sneakered feet, one comic book at a time. I'm your host, my name is Steven, and today we travel west from Wan Tangri and explore the abandoned city of Kara-Shur in search of ancient treasure as we look at Conan the Barbarian number 35. This issue sports a cover date of February 1974, though it hit the stands in November of 1973. It sold for just 20 cents, and it is entitled The Hellspawn of Kara-Shur. It was written by Roy Thomas with pencils by John Buscema, inks by Ernie Chan. The letters were by John Costanza, and the colorist was Glynis Ween.
Into the boat!
Following the events of the previous issue, Conan and Bortai find themselves riding camels through the desert southeast of the Viliat Sea, as they travel west to Agrippur, capital of Turin. Their journey is delayed, however, as they come upon a small group of camel-mounted bandits as they harass a haggard-looking man who is on foot. Our heroes intervene, and soon the bandits beat feet, leaving Conan with little to do but care for the dying man, who just moments ago the bandits had put a spear into. The bandits, however, return with reinforcements, and Conan and Bortai flee with the dying man into the desert, where after losing their pursuers, the man dies. But not before telling the two about the Azure Eye, a great jewel from the city of Kara-Shur. Conan and Bortai set off once again, but are soon in the middle of a violent sandstorm. They survive, but as the skies clear, our heroes find themselves before the ruins of Kara-Shur, City of the Dead. Conan is wary, but Bortai wants the jewel, so they explore the ancient ruins. Soon they come upon the throne room, where they find, sitting on the throne, a skeleton clutching a great big blue gem, the Azure Eye of Kara-Shur. Conan warns his companion to leave the gem be, but Bortai ignores him and claims his prize. The barbarian, wanting to test a theory, has Bortai put the eye back, and as he does so, the skeletal hand closes on the gem. At that moment, the bandits from earlier burst into the room, and in their lead, Kai Shah, whom Conan met some months earlier in the fortress of Bab el-Shaitan. Kai Shah takes the eye for himself when a mysterious creature of mists and fangs bursts from the wall and kills Kai Shah as Conan works the remaining bandits over. In the tussle, Bortai grabs up the eye once again, and the creature goes for him. Conan tries with all his might to stop the devil from taking his pal, but the creature is too powerful for him and slaps the big barbarian across the room. Soon, the creature is gone. The bandits have fled. Bortai is nowhere to be seen, and Conan is alone in the City of the Dead, where, facing the throne, he can see a second and third skeleton have joined the first, each to either side of the throne. As the issue ends, Conan has had enough, and knowing that Bortai is dead, turns and walks away. Okay, so as the issue mentions there on the very first page. This story was freely adapted from The Fire of Ashurbanipal by Robert E. Howard. And I'm butchering the name, and I've tried hundreds of times. Ashurbanipal by Robert E. Howard, who, you know, if you're looking at that issue, if you're looking at that bit on the first page, it tells you there that Robert E. Howard is the guy that created Conan, you know, in case you weren't aware, which I'm not trying to crack wise here, folks. I'm pretty sure there were plenty of people who were reading this issue or just reading the series in general at any point in time and were not aware that Robert E. Howard created Conan. And so you got to remind folks every once in a while. And I'm fairly certain that in most issues, it's mentioned there on the title page that Conan was created by Robert E. Howard. And I guess they just changed it up a little bit. Now, I didn't read the story that this Conan story was based on. I probably won't. If the issue is based on a Conan story, I will try my best to read that Conan story, whether it was written by Robert E. Howard or L. Sprague de Camp or Lynn Carter or Robert Jordan or whoever. I seriously doubt we're going to come across any based on Robert Jordan stories, because I don't think Robert Jordan started writing Conan stories until long after this series was done. Anyway, if it's an actual Conan story, I'll probably try to read it before talking about it on the episode. But this is not based on a Conan story. It is based on a story written by Robert E. Howard, but it's not Conan, so I didn't read it, because a fella's only got so much time in their life to do stuff. And if I feel like I have to read something like that to make this episode better, and it's not something I'm really all that hyped about reading, then it feels like homework. And then what's the point of doing the show, right? Y'all feel me? Anyway, that's about all I have in regard to any info on this issue, or at least anything that I feel needs to be said up front. There might be a couple of things here and there that we'll talk about as we're looking in the issue itself, as we're diving deep. So I'll save that for then. But yeah, let's dive in, folks. So as always, we will start with the cover. This is another cover by Gil Kane, inked by Ernie Chan. Roy does talk about this a bit during this chapter in his book, Barbarian Life, a Literary Biography of Conan the Barbarian, Volume 1. There are three volumes out. But I want to read to you this bit from his book where he talks about not specifically this cover, but Gil Kane and the covers that he has been doing for Conan up to this point. So I will read it in the way I assume Roy sounds. And if you're watching the video, you can see I'm shaking my head, which is telling everybody I'm lying.
A note about the reason for all these Gil Kane covers on Conan the Barbarian. At the time this story was done, I was editor-in-chief. In order to keep things running smoothly with all the titles we were putting out every month, I had worked out a system whereby, at regular intervals, Gil rode the train into New York from his Connecticut home. We'd sit in my office and go over photocopies of the various stories / issues that needed covered. Photocopies supplied by production manager John Verporten. Flipping through these photocopies, either Gil or I would come up with an idea for a good cover scene, and Gil would draw a fast thumbnail sketch of it. After perhaps a few alterations, or sometimes a second or third idea, Gil would go home, and over the next week or so, penciled covers would start arriving in the Marvel offices. I'd look at them, and then, sometimes with corrections by art director John Romita or staff artists such as Marie Severin and Herb Trimpe, they would be sent out for inking. In the case of Conan, Gil Kane had also been a fan of Robert E. Howard's fiction when I was playing Cowboys and Indians back in my native Missouri, so he was doubly eager to do them. And they almost always turned out well, especially when inked by Ernie Chan / Chua.
So a couple of notes on that little bit of writing from Roy. Ernie Chan / Chua, we talked about this a number of episodes back on the first issue that Ernie Chan inked. I don't remember what that was off the top of my head, but he was going by Ernie Chua at the time. but he is Ernie Chan. It was some long story involving citizenship rights and junk. I think he had put Chua on his passport or something. I don't know. I can't remember. Go back, find the episode. If you can remember the episode number, let me know if you're watching, and maybe I can slide it into this episode at some point so folks can go find it. But if not, I'll use one of those text-to-speech things, and I'll insert it right here.
Ernie Chan's first Conan the Barbarian issue was Conan the Barbarian number 26.
Pretty slick, huh? I also want to point out that Roy mentions here that he's from Missouri, and I pronounce it as Missouri, and I've heard it both ways. I'm in Kansas. I border Missouri, and so they are our naturally sworn enemies. So Roy, I don't know, learning that you're from Missouri, I knew there was something. Knew that there was something about you that I just wasn't quite sure about, and I think that's it. Now, I don't know if people from Missouri actually pronounce it Missouri, but I did it for two reasons. One, because I think it's funny, and two, if people from Missouri don't say Missouri, it's going to piss them off, and as they're my naturally sworn enemies, that, you know, that's a good day. It's a good day for me to piss off somebody from Missouri.
Lowest form of white man there is.
It's a joke. I'm joking. I'm good at jokes.
I am, of course, being facetious. I don't just naturally hate people who are from Missouri, but it's kind of fun to pretend to hate. It's fun to pretend to hate, isn't it, folks? Pretending to hate. All right, so let's go through the issue itself. Well, actually, looking at the cover, I should probably stick with the cover. I rather enjoy this one. You've got Conan with a woman behind him. The woman does not show up in the issue at all. And I can't, gosh darn it, I talked about this again in an earlier issue or earlier episode, and I wish I had been more prepared for this episode, but there is a name that they had started to give these women. If there is a woman on the cover of a Conan issue who did not appear in the issue, then they had a name for her, and I can't remember what it was. But I'll try to find out what that name was, and I'll use some text to speech with a very proper sounding English woman, or maybe someone from Ireland, to tell us which episode that was and what the name was that they used. And I'll insert that right here.
The name Roy Thomas had given to the ever-changing bit of female cheesecake that appeared on a Conan cover, but not in the interior story, was Mirage. Stephen spoke about this in the Conan the Barbarian number 29 episode.
Again, technology, right? Pretty slick. Anyway, the reason for the woman, though, on the cover is because eye candy, right? It helps the young boys to pick something out when they see a bunch of comics on the rack. And here is a tough, muscly, shirtless man with a sword and a knife, and he's fighting a demon, and there's a half-naked lady behind him. Hell yeah, that's like every young kid's dream cover right there.
That's the dream.
Really? That's the dream?
Yeah.
So Gil always felt like he had to, I guess, add a woman to the cover, whether a woman showed up in the issue or not. And I find that very funny because, you know, I'm the first one who complains about covers that don't depict what's going on inside the issue. But I speak more in general on, you know, the example I always use. There was an X-Men cover, I don't know, back in the 2000s at some point that had Wolverine on the cover sitting on a motorcycle or standing next to a motorcycle. And not only did Wolverine not appear in the issue at all, there was also no motorcycles in the issue. And that's what I'm talking about. Here, we've got a cover that contains three entities, figures, people. I don't want to call them people because one is a monster. We've got the demon, the shadowy mist demon, and we have Conan, and then we have a woman. So of these three figures, two out of three appear in the issue. So that's pretty good, if you ask me. We also have, I always want to mention, I keep forgetting to mention the corner box. You know, back in the day, Marvel had their corner boxes. And so up there, the corner box would contain, of course, the price of the issue and the number of the issue and the date, the month, the cover date, as we would say. So up there in that corner is all that. But they also added they would also add a bit of art to make that corner box even more special. And lately, the art in the corner box has been Conan holding an axe, a double-bladed axe, like two half-moon blades, one on each side. The back blade is a little bit smaller than the front blade, but every time I see that, he's also wearing a big old belt, like something you'd win for becoming the world wrestling champ. That's what it looks like. It looks like a big wrestling belt, or wrestling belt, if you want to say. But every time I see that image of Conan in the corner, I'm like, I want to see Conan with a freaking, I want to see him fight with a big old axe. And we haven't seen him fight with a big axe yet, but we will. Anyway, back to the cover itself. Conan, sword in hand, knife in hand, protecting a blonde buxom babe from a demon-type creature, very mist-covered, shadowy, purple-eyed demon. The title is there on the cover, the Hellspawn of Kara Shur. So you're going to assume that this demon creature is the Hellspawn of Kara Shur. And then we get a little text box here that says, beneath the desert sands, there sleeps a demon. Not Gene Simmons. That's not the demon they're talking about, if you're a Kiss fan. There's also a lot of sand and wind blowing around on this cover. It's a great cover. I'm a big fan of this cover. I think Gil Kane can be kind of hit and miss. I've enjoyed more of his covers than I have not enjoyed. I'll say that. But this is definitely one I really dig. I think if we know now because of, you know, history and stuff that John Buscema was on the title for a long time. But I think if John Buscema had left, Gil Kane, I think, would be a good substitute. He did do a few issues after all, but that's the cover.
It's great.
Getting into the issue, we start with our splash page, which is Conan on a camel. He's got the, can't think of what they call it. It's not a turban. He's got the thing over his head. I think they would refer to him as a shufa in the Wheel of Time. I'm not trying to be culturally insensitive. I'm really not. I just can't think of what they're called. But he's protecting his head from the sun. His chest and shoulders and arms and legs are bare, though. He's still wearing that green skort, which is fine. It just means that Conan is going to come out bronze and dark. It's the way we like our Conan, bronze and muscly.
You're so big and so well-grown.
But he's on a camel, and with him is Bortai, little Bortai, who had left Wan Tangri with Conan in the previous issue. We don't know this. I don't think it mentions this at all in the issue. Maybe it does, now that I think about it. It's a little later. But Conan and Bortai, by this point, have been on the road, as it were, after having left Wan Tangri. It's been a number of weeks. It's been a few weeks since the end of the previous issue. And they've been traveling west across the desert around the southern end of the Viliette Sea to get to Agrippur, which is the capital of Turin. And Conan is currently working for the Turanian army. That's why he is out here doing what he's doing. He was spying on Wan Tangri. He was going to just see if Wan Tangri was ripe for conquer. And then he was to report back to his captain or the guy who sent him on the mission, Naram Bey, in Agrippur. But currently, that's where they're heading to. We get the title of the issue, The Hellspawn of Kara Shur, and Conan's on his camel. He sees something off in the distance. Bortai's wondering what it is that Conan is spying upon. Conan tells him to get on up here and he'll see for himself. And Conan is basically sitting at the top of a ridge on his camel. I said it that way. And so Bortai joins him and we can see over there. Now on the other side of the ridge, when we get to page two, there is a dude holding a sword and a knife, a sword in one hand, a knife in the other. He's very ragged looking. His clothes are falling off of him. They're in tatters. He's on foot in the middle of the desert. So that's not good. And there are at least four dudes on camels who are waylaying him, I guess you could say. They're surrounding him. They've got their swords out. One dude has a big spear and they're circling this dude. Bortai tells Conan, well, hey, I'm sure that guy did something to piss those four off. Let's just let them do what they're going to do. There's no need for us to interfere. Conan, however, points out, yeah, but at the same time, those four guys on camels could be bandits. They could be brigands. They could be murderers. And that could be just some innocent guy down there. And we should probably go find out what's going on. And if this guy needs help, we should probably help him because, you know, Conan, deep down, he's a good guy. And so they go charging in, and as the four bandits see, you know, Bortai and Conan coming down upon them, one of the bandits points out that Conan, or at least he mentions one of the people that are riding towards us, looks almost to be a giant. And so one of the other bandits is like, well, we have to freaking finish this up and get out here then. You know, get out of here. I don't know. And so he throws his spear and stabs this dude on foot, stabs him in the back. Conan, at that point, rides in. He cuts one of them down, and then the other three ride off. Conan leaps down immediately to remove the spear from the guy's back. Bortai, again, he's like, yeah, I don't know. I don't even know why you're bothering. The guy's obviously going to die. Conan, again, he's a good guy, so he wants to help the dude. So he picks him up, and he's gonna, I guess, try to take him somewhere, take him to a place of safety, wherever that may be in the middle of the desert. Probably he's just going to take him with the two of them to wherever they're going. Bortai, again, though, is trying to talk him out of it. The decision, however, is made for them when the three bandits who ran away, they return with reinforcements. So there's like a big bunch of them now. And Conan jumps up into his camel saddle, has the guy with him, and he and Bortai go riding off.
Let's ride!
Skip a couple of pages of ads. We're now on page 6 of the comic, or I don't know what page of the story that would be. My page numbers are how they numbered the pages in the actual comic, which they numbered the ad pages as well. Anyway, hours later, they have lost their pursuers, and they stop for a moment so that Conan can maybe better tend to this dude's wounds. And he asks Bortai to bring them the water, the flask or the canteen or whatever they call it. The water gourd. That's what it says right there in that first panel of page 6 there. The water gourd. Bortai again. Bortai's all about Bortai. The whole reason he's hanging out with Conan is because Conan can protect him, I think, is really the whole reason Bortai is still with Conan. Conan can protect him, and Conan can probably help him get some coin at some point. You know, Conan used to be a thief. Bortai is a thief. He kind of looks up to Conan, I guess. I don't know. But Bortai does not want to bring this guy his water gourd because, as far as he's concerned, the dude's about to die. What's the point of wasting their water in the desert for a guy that's dying? And Conan just basically tells him to shut up. You know, I think Conan knows if the guy's going to die. Well, I think Conan knows the guy's going to die, obviously. Conan's not stupid. But Conan wants to make it, you know, his death, I guess, as comfortable as possible. And if the guy, you know, wants to wet his whistle there before he passes on, Conan's going to allow that to happen. You know, it's the one little comfort that he can give this guy out in the middle of the desert. But the guy starts talking. He has very little strength left, but he mentions something called the Azure Eye of Karashur. And he mentions it away because, I'll tell you what he says here.
You tried to save me. For that, I thank you. But it was too late for me. Too late. The instant I first beheld the Azure Eye of Karashur.
At that point, Conan tries to stop him, you know, telling him that he, you know, save his strength. He doesn't need to be talking right now. But the guy continues.
No, no, must talk, must warn you, for it's not far. But hell would not be far enough to save you from bleh.
And that's when he passes out. And Bortai's all excited because he's heard of both Karashur and the Azure Eye. He tells Conan that they call Karashur the City of the Dead, and that the Azure Eye, the legends say, is a jewel worth its weight in stars, whatever that means. Nobody pays anybody with stars. That would be kind of a hard... I mean, stars would be pretty valuable. I guess that's kind of the point there.
Hither Came Conan will return after these messages.
This summer, Batman Nightcast returns.
Because we, just like Lex Luthor, will not abide Superman dominating the pop culture conversation.
That's not true at all. We love Batman and Superman. That's why the first 5 episodes of the new Nightcast will spotlight both of them together as friends.
It kicks off in June with the weekly release of new episodes covering the first five issues of Mark Waid and Dan Mora's modern Batman Superman World's Finest.
All leading up to the new Superman movie. Holy Bat Synergy!
And after that, we'll revisit those beloved Max Allen Collins issues.
Maybe you are Lex Luthor.
Batman Nightcast.
Part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Do you love podcasting but hate editing? Do you have a number of episodes recorded but just can't find the time to get them edited and ready for release? Do you need help and you're not sure what to do? Well, come talk to me. My name is Stephen Orr. I have over a decade of experience recording and editing my own podcasts, and I want to put those skills to work for you. I can remove that background noise. I can reduce silences. I'll remove all of your ums and your uhs, as well as your throat clearings, sneezes and coughs and such. And I can even add your music and whatnot. And hey, my prices are quite reasonable. Check out edityourpod.com to get started. That's edityourpod.com. Or just reach out to me directly. Email edityourpod@gmail.com. Tell me what you need, and I'll tell you how I can help. And more importantly, quote you a cost. Edityourpod.com. Get started today. And now back to Hither Came Conan.
Bortai points out that the dude's like, he's telling us that this jewel and the city is near. We need to get over there and get that freaking thing and get our payday. But Conan, again, tells him to just freaking settle down because they are going to wait until this guy dies. They're not just going to leave him here to die by himself. They will stay with the guy and, you know, so the guy doesn't die alone in the middle of the desert.
Say no more, you big softy.
I don't know that Robert E. Howard's Conan would do this. I don't know. What do you guys think? What does everybody think? Shoot me an email or respond to the thread or the post over at Blue Sky or whatever. Wherever you see this, me posting about this episode, let me know what you think about whether your opinion on whether you think the Robert E. Howard Conan would be this caring, you know, to go to these lengths just to comfort a dying stranger. Conan knows nothing about the guy other than the fact that he was attacked by bandits in the desert, and yet still he's, you know, giving them some of the last of their water and is going to stay there for however long it takes that guy to die. He's going to be there with him until he does. It doesn't actually take long. By the time the sun sets, the guy's dead, and Conan and Bortai head off into the desert.
Let's ride!
It's not long before, on page 7, they are suddenly, I want to say attacked. They're attacked by a sandstorm. I can't think of the word. Suddenly a sandstorm erupts around them. They're caught in the middle of a sandstorm. And they can't see anything. Bortai is practically knocked. Well, it looks like he is knocked unconscious by the storm itself. The wind and the sand just knocks him on his ass. And Conan is forced to pick him up and go along, you know, go on carrying Bortai with him. But eventually the sandstorm dies and the two are just kind of chilling. Bortai wakes up and Bortai gets to looking around. And there's this thing that starts happening in this issue. If we go back to page 3, when Conan chases off the bandits and he jumps down from his camel to help the guy that the bandits had speared, there's a point there, well, it's on page 3, the second panel, where Bortai points off into the distance and says,
"Master, may the thousand gods of my native Kitai protect us. Look!"
And Conan turns to look, and that's when they see all the three bandits have returned with reinforcements. So we get back to where we were, page 7, and in the last panel of this page, we get kind of a repeat of that. Bortai gets up, sandstorm is gone, he starts to look around, and he's curious about what they might find over on the other side of the ridge. And he decides to scramble up there and take a look. And when he does, he says,
"Master! Master, lo!"
And points out that there's something over there to see, and it is the lost city of Kara Shur. This page here, it's a double page spread of the city, this ruined city surrounded by walls. Everything in the city that is above, maybe like the second story, is crumbling and in ruin. I'm assuming the walls are protecting anything below the walls, basically, from the sand and the sandstorms. You can see just big dunes of sand that have been swept up against the walls and, you know, almost threatening to bury the city. It's a really nice double page spread. We get to page 14. Bortai wants to go into the city. He wants to go in and find the Azure Eye, but Conan does not. Conan is a bit smarter. He doesn't really allow greed to control him. Maybe he did at one point, but that's not quite who he is at this, you know, anymore. He's grown a bit. He understands that maybe going into a ruined city in the middle of the desert to find some ancient jewel is probably not the best idea. He's experienced enough at this point to know that usually something like that is protected by something else, and he doesn't want to go in. And Bortai basically tells him, fine, you stay out here. I'm going to go in and I'm going to get that freaking thing, that big old jewel. I'm going to get my prize. And so Bortai starts heading in. And finally, as Conan watches him right away, Conan decides, all right, I'll go in with you. And I think it's because Conan just wants to keep an eye on Bortai, whom, if you remember, he refers to as Monkey Face. But we kind of get the sense that Conan maybe cared a little more for Bortai than he lets on. We kind of get that sense a little bit later in the issue, which is why I say at this point, I can say that I feel like the reason Conan is going into the city with him is because Conan wants to keep an eye on him. He wants to protect him. He wants to keep Bortai safe. Anyway, Conan and Bortai go into the city of Karasure. Bortai is telling Conan the stories that he's heard about Karasure, telling Conan that the city is so old that it's older than Set, the serpent god. And he mentions to Conan that it was an outpost of ancient Acheron, which Conan recognizes. He recognizes the name. He says that a sorcerer by the name of Zukala once babbled, as he puts it. Basically, the guy had mentioned the ancient city of Acheron. And Zukala, if you remember, first showed up in issue number 5 of Conan the Barbarian. It even boasted his name in the title of the issue, Zukala's daughter. He's shown up a couple of other times, but issue number 5 was his first appearance. I think he showed up again during the two-issue crossover with Elric of Melnibone.
Nice hat!
And then Acheron, if I remember correctly, Acheron is the name of the city in the Robert E. Howard story, Hour of the Dragon, which people consider actually his only Conan novel because it's longer than his typical Conan stories. The bad guy in that, the wizard whose name I can't remember, I'm fairly certain, he was a wizard who had quote unquote died and they bring him back to life or wake him up basically in Hour of the Dragon in their present. But he was a wizard or something back in the day for the city of Acheron, if I remember correctly.
He's the wizard.
Anyway, here on page 14, like I said, they're going through the ruins of Karasure. Bortai, when he mentions that the city basically is older than the god Set, Conan, pointing out some of the decorations or the statuary of the city, one of which appears to be a bull with wings, Conan points out that these people obviously didn't worship Set, and that based on their statuary, they worshipped man-headed bulls, or rather man-headed bulls with the wings of bats. You see the statue of this so-called man-headed bull with the wing of a bat. You can see them in this panel here, the first panel of the bottom of page 14, but it's not good enough. It's not big enough for me to be able to tell that, yes, indeed, it does have the face of a man. But still, at the end, when we get to the bottom or the last panel of page 14, we have another one of those moments where suddenly Bortai is looking off camera, as it were, off panel, and he says, "Master, look!" We turn the page. We can see now what Bortai sees.
A temple, master. Sand encroached, columns cracked, but still a temple.
And so they go into the temple. And one of the first things they see upon entering the temple is this giant statue of some kind of weird, fat, pointy-eared, demon-looking creature with pointy fingers and pointy toes and no nose. And it's very alien-looking. Conan wonders if it's the god of the temple. Bortai doesn't know, perhaps, basically, he says, but he says that...
The legends of Kerishir say it wasn't gods who were the true masters of the city, but devils who are even more powerful than gods.
Conan finds that interesting for some reason, and then he spies a set of stairs, and he decides to go ahead and ascend them. Bortai tells him to stop, doesn't want him to go up the stairs, because as Bortai puts it,
they say when demons haunt a building, they lurk in the upper chambers.
To which Conan has a wonderful response.
That little legend sounds fresh minted on the spot.
Which, basically just means that Bortai doesn't want to go upstairs, and so he's decided to make up some legend that if there is a demon or a devil in this city, it's going to be in one of the upper floors, because that's where they hang out, so they probably shouldn't go up there. Conan calls bullshit on that bit. When we get to the end of page 15, the last panel, another moment of Bortai seeing something off in the distance and pointing it out to Conan.
This is the throne room, master. Behold!
And then we turn the page. We see the throne room. There is a massive panel that takes up the entire top half of this page, page 16. And it's a great, great looking panel. We've got a skeleton covered in cobwebs sitting in a throne. It's all, you know, laid back. It looks like it's being trying to be all cash, but it looks more like, you know, since it's a skeleton, that whoever it used to be died sitting there in the chair. But it's clutching this big blue stone in its hand, this blue gemstone, and that would be the Azure Eye of Kerishir. And yeah, it's just a great panel. It's probably one of my favorite panels in this issue. Bortai, seeing the jewel, he goes after it right away. And there's this great bit here. There's this funny moment where Conan tries to make him stop. He tells him that, well, what Conan says is,
not so fast, little one. I've encountered such things before, and I know the pattern of them. Touch that jewel, and that skeleton thing will come to life, and we'll have to fight it off. I've been all through this before.
So that's kind of a jokey callback to the issue where Conan fights the giant of the Hillmen. And we have the flashback in that issue where he comes upon a sword in an underground chamber, and he has to fight his shadow for the sword because it's an enchanted sword. But I think more than that, I think this is kind of a playful call to the fact that that story was supposed to be based on The Thing in the Crypt, which was an L. Sprague de Camp pastiche Conan story about Conan coming across a sword in a crypt and having to fight like an undead warrior for the sword. So it's, I think for maybe folks who might be reading this issue for the first time now in this day and age, I think a lot of us feel like it seems like Conan is fighting things after, something is holding a sword or a gem or a bar of gold or a necklace or an amulet, some dead thing or a statue or something. You take it from him, it's going to come to life and Conan's got to fight it. I feel like we've seen it all the time in Conan books, right?
Do you know what horrors lie beyond that wall?
No.
Then you go first.
But really, it's just because of The Thing in the Crypt. If you look at, for example, the movie Conan the Barbarian, the exact same thing happens in Conan the Barbarian. That's where he gets his sword, the sword that you see him use for the rest of the movie and Conan the Destroyer. That's taken directly from, I believe, The Thing in the Crypt, which I always assumed was a Robert E. Howard story until a couple of years ago. It's not L. Sprague de Camp. So Bortai ignores Conan and he grabs the jewel from the hand of the skeleton. Conan is just kind of, we get to page 17, Conan is just kind of standing there watching. It's a really great John Buscema panel of Conan, just his face. And he, as he's watching Bortai take this jewel, he feels like, well, he's just waiting for something to happen. He's waiting for the skeleton to move or just something, some monster to come in at them. And what he doesn't know is that behind them, there's a door in this wall, a hidden door, and it starts to kind of silently move, starts to open silently. But Conan, he kind of has, I don't know if, I think I used the word theory in the synopsis, but Conan tells Bortai that he wants him to put the gem back because he wants to see something. He wants to see if something will happen. He kind of has this feeling that the skeleton might do something if they put the gem back. And so Bortai acquiesces and he puts the azure eye back in the skeleton's hand, and the hand actually closes over the gem, which I think is what Conan was kind of thinking. I think it's kind of what he was waiting to see. But more than that, the wall behind them closes. Not silently. I think the text box says,
"The most imperceptible of rumbles."
Just enough that Conan kind of catches the sound. And so he turns around. He's, what's going on? What's going on out there? And I've heard something. There's something going on. And Conan decides, I don't know what's going through Conan's head here. Because first he has Bortai put the gem back because he wants to see something. That's what he says. I want to see, put it back. I want to see something. He puts it back. Skeleton hand closes. Door closes. Conan doesn't know there's a door behind them, but he hears it. So he knows there's something going on out there and then just decides to ignore it. And now he wants to see if something else happens. He says, if the skeleton hand closed around the gem when we put it back, will the hand open if we take it again? Because I guess he just wasn't paying attention the first time. Again, I don't know what he's trying to prove here. I don't know what he's trying to see. The fact that Conan didn't want to take the gem in the first place because he said that if you take it, the skeleton will probably come alive. The fact that he saw the hand close over the gem should be enough to tell Conan, get the fuck out. And then Conan should leave. But I guess for Conan, that wasn't quite enough. He wants to prove that this skeleton will come alive. And so he didn't see what the hand did when Bortai took the gem. So now he has an opportunity to see what happens if he takes the gem. But he goes to get the gem. He's just about to reach out when somebody calls from off panel.
Don't touch that gem, barbarian.
We turn the page, page 18, and the bandits from earlier in the issue have arrived now here in this throne room. And they have a guy leading them who Conan recognizes. Actually, before even that point, Conan does what he typically does when a big bunch of armed bandits show up out of the blue. He draws his sword and he starts cutting them down. It's as he kills a number of them that he finally notices who it is that's leading this group. And it's a guy named Kai Shaw. Kai Shaw, if you remember, made his, well, I'll guess at this point, I would have said his only appearance, but now his first appearance in issue number 27 of Conan the Barbarian, The Blood of Belhisar. And there's this moment in issue 27. If you remember, I'm trying to remember the exact plot of issue 27.
Into the boat!
Conan, out in the desert again, for some reason or another, he runs across this Kitai woman and this Kitai man who is assaulting her. He rescues her. They end up at this keep, this castle, and it's being controlled by basically just a great big bunch of bandits. And there's one particular guy who he's the leader of all of them, but as far as the bandits themselves, they've actually separated into two separate groups. One of those groups is led by a dude by the name of Khadra Mahmed, or Khadra Mahmed. And then the other is led by a Hyrkanian by the name of Kai Shaw. And that's who this guy is here in issue 35.
Hither Came Conan will return after these messages.
Are you looking for a podcast that dives into the very beginnings of the Man of Steel? Then check out the Superman Super Show. My name is Steven, and along with Ed Moore, we're just a couple of guys separated by 1,000 miles of geography who like to read comics.
Now, we don't claim to be experts on Superman or the Golden Age of comics, but we're on a mission to read every single Superman story from his earliest adventures, one comic book at a time. In each episode, we'll take you back to the Golden Age, where Superman's journey began. From his first leaps over tall buildings to battling mad scientists and mobsters, we break down every story, sharing our thoughts, insights, and laughs along the way. New episodes drop every 2 weeks. So whether you're a longtime Superman fan or just curious about his roots, we invite you to join us on this incredible journey through comic book history. Find the Superman Super Show wherever you listen to podcasts and start exploring the Golden Age of Superman with us today. According to the latest report from falsifiedstats.com, there are currently 12 million active comic book podcasts clogging up the internet superhighway, and 2.3 million new comic book podcasts are being created every single day. If you're looking for something a little different, then let me tell you about Mike's Comic Shop Roadshow. Mike travels the globe and visits comic shops along the way, talking to the owners, or really just whomever happens to be minding the store that day. And it's through these conversations that you'll meet some wonderful people and learn how comic shops are run in places like Murfreesboro, Illinois, and Liverpool, New South Wales, Australia. So check out Mike's Comic Shop Roadshow, a truly unique comic book podcast among billions of the same old, same old. Find it now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Mike, and I approve this message.
And now back to Hither Came Conan.
Now, Kaishaw is here because I guess, well, first of all, he wants to kill Conan. He blames Conan for what happened back at Bab El Shaitan. That was the outlaw stronghold where they first met. But by the time Conan had left, basically all of the bandits, if I remember correctly, were all killing each other. And it had to do with this jewel, the blood of Belhisar, I think it was called, if that was like the name of the story. But something about that jewel, I don't know. I don't remember. Folks, go back and read it. Go back and listen to the episode. I'm really trying not to be an asshole.
Yeah, well, good luck with that.
But it ended very violently. Kaishaw obviously got out of there with his life, but he has a very horrible scar over one eye. And you get the feeling, I guess, that that happened during the end, you know, of issue number 27. And again, he blames Conan for that. Plus, he was hoping to get this jewel in issue 27, and now here's another jewel in issue 35. So he's kind of looking at that as well. So from page 18, we skip a couple of ad pages and we go to page 22, and Kaishaw, all his bandits have wrestled Conan to the ground. This is where we learn that Kaishaw blames Conan, but Conan tries to tell Kaishaw that it wasn't him. He didn't take the blood jewel of Belhisar. It was a Khitan band by the name of Turgul, and that Turgul is probably long gone by now, but Kaishaw, he doesn't care. He just wants some revenge. Conan's right there in front of him. That's the revenge he's going to get. And he tells him,
"Still, I believe you when you say you don't have the blood jewel. For what man having one legend-haunted jewel would brave this lost city in search of another? Your slow, tortured death will be but a pleasant diversion for me later. It is to find this jewel that I wrested leadership of these wild brigands. Legend says that no man who touches it will ever live out the night."
And that's how page 22 ends. Go to page 23, and what's the guy doing? He's taking hold of the jewel. So he obviously doesn't believe the legend that anybody who takes hold of the jewel will not live to the end of the night. And he doesn't clarify that. Does that mean anybody who takes hold of the jewel and then puts it back? Are they going to live? Or just anybody, just straight up anybody who touches it? And I guess we're going to find out, because Bortai did touch it. He picked it up. He pulled the jewel from the skeleton's hand. He put it back. But if the legend is that literal, anybody who touches it, then Bortai might be in for a bit of a bad time. Now, Kaishaw reaches down, he takes the eye from the skeleton, and he suddenly just starts in terror. He like jerks and he yells out,
"By the manhood of Erlik!"
And that's when he points out that the stone, the eye, It cried out. He heard the stone cry out. Nobody else heard it, but Kai Shaw did. And he decides that if anything's going to happen to him, it's probably going to be because he took this gem from that skeleton. So he's going to bash the skeleton's skull in with his sword, and everything's going to be okay. And so that's exactly what he does. The bandits, in the meantime, are very confused. They're kind of yelling at their new leader because they were told that they were just coming in here to get Conan because this was all about revenge. Nobody said anything about this cursed jewel and all that junk. But we leave page 23, get through another couple of pages of ads. We get to page 26. Kai Shaw had dropped the eye when he had, started, when he jerked in fear when the gem spoke to him or whatever. And so the jewel's there on the ground. He reaches down to pick it up. And that wall behind them that had started opening earlier when Bortai took up the gem, it starts to open again. And tendrils of smoke seep out of this opening. I'll read you the text as Roy describes it.
Mesmerized, Kai Shaw sees neither the far wall swing open once more, nor the eerie mist which pours therefrom like tendrils of eerie smoke. Then, abruptly, his one good eye stares through the sky-blue gem and focuses in sudden, searing terror on that which now stands before him.
So this is the bottom of page 23. It's one panel that takes up almost half of the page, and we see this black, shadowy demon. There's a certain, I don't know what style you'd call this, but the way that Buscema draws him, it's like a solid black object, but it's made out of like where the mists cover it. It's like made out of these like scratchy, sketchy lines. And so it looks kind of incorporeal. That was a horrible word to try to use. It doesn't look like it's substantive. I picked another stupid word. It doesn't look fully formed. It looks like it's part of the mists, basically. I'm going to continue reading the text here because I think it perfectly describes what's going on in this bottom panel.
Is it a solid flesh and blood thing he sees? Or a fearful phantom burst of mist and the wind? No matter, to Kai Shaw, it is horribly real, grimly terrible. And he screams.
Go to the next page. Page 27, and we are seeing the reactions of the bandits. We've got two bandits that are holding on to Conan, and we can see their reactions to their leader screaming. And they don't look brave. We'll put it that way. They look like they had the shit scared out of them.
No way, gross.
Conan takes advantage of this and throws both of them off of him. And he grabs up the knife from one of them and the sword from the other, which I believe is a scimitar. And he goes into the mists and the wind and the swirling sands to find Bortai. And again, I'm going to read this text to you because I like what Roy's throwing down here.
Like a great burly bear, Conan strikes, hurling a trio of men from him as though they were tenpins of a later age. Moments later, he stalks into the swirling sand, the name of Bortai, not Monkey Face, on his lips.
And I think that little text tells a lot about what's going through Conan's mind right here. Again, I said earlier that the reason why Conan followed Bortai into the city, even though he didn't want to go in there in the first place, is because he wanted to keep an eye on Bortai and protect him. And this is one of two moments here near the end of the book that I feel justify that theory, that idea, that feeling of mine that Conan, he's grown to really like Bortai over these last few weeks. And the fact that the text is mentioning that Conan is basically walking into certain danger, but all he's thinking about, or the reason he's walking into this certain danger, is because of Bortai. And the fact that it clarifies that it's the name Bortai that he's thinking of and not Monkey Face, which Bortai doesn't like being called Monkey Face, and the fact that Conan, in his head, in his thoughts, as he's fearful for Bortai's safety, I keep saying his name all weird, Bortai's safety, he's thinking of him as Bortai and not the name that Bortai doesn't like. And so Conan goes in there to try to find Bortai. He can kind of see the demon through the mists. He comes across some of the bandits. They start to mix it up a bit. But at the end of page 27 here, the bandits are basically saying, let's just get the hell out of here. Screw Kai Sha and his crazy idea of getting this gem, because we knew it was a stupid idea in the first place. We're taking off. Skip a new another few pages of ads to get to page 30, the next page in the story. And there's this great panel. I keep saying that a lot because John Buscema does a lot of great panels. But there's this panel of the demon, the mist demon thing, standing there next to this wall, and it's holding Kai Sha in its hand. And as the text puts it, the narration box,
a ragdoll could not be more still.
So Kai Sha's dead, folks. He's dead. We see the bandits fleeing. We see the mist demon watching the bandits flee. But Conan, in the meantime, he's still trying to find Bortai. He's shouting out Bortai's name, and he finds Bortai, and he admonishes him for, you know, what are you doing? Are you still looking for that gem? And Bortai tells him, nope, not looking for it, buddy. I have found it. And there on the ground in front of Bortai is the gem. Bortai gets down. He doesn't just bend over to pick it up. He gets down on his hands and knees. And he's down there and he's getting ready to pick it up. Conan can see the demon is now standing over Bortai. And he knows that if Bortai touches that gem, he's going to die. So he screams out Bortai's name. And then he starts coming to him. He's running towards him. And he's screaming, I'm coming, Bortai! Which, that for me, that's the moment that if anything else in this book didn't convince me that Conan kind of likes old Bortai, that was the moment right there. Conan looks desperate. He looks afraid. And he is charging in to save his buddy's life. But it doesn't happen because the demon is just a bit too much for Conan and literally just slaps Conan back against one of the back walls. The air around them, I should say, since this demon has come out, it's icy cold in the room. So we go to page 31. Conan is picking himself up off of the floor. The demon is now retreating back into the wall, into the hidden door. All the mist and the sand and the wind and the cold air goes with him. The door closes and Conan is there in the throne room. He's alone and he looks over to the throne. We go to page 32, the final page of the story, the final page of the issue, and we see the throne. We see the skeleton upon the throne still clutching. He's got the gem back in his hand. There's a big bit missing from the skull of the skeleton where Kai Sha had caved in the skull with his sword. But we also see two new skeletons, one to either side of the throne. And as the text tells us,
one of the new skeletons is small, almost dwarf-like.
And they have referred to Bortai often in these last, I guess, four issues now that Bortai has been a part of. Well, Bortai actually didn't show up until the second of the Flamewind trilogy, or at least we didn't know him as Bortai. He has a shadowy appearance at the end of the first of the three issues. So really, Bortai's only been in these last three issues, the final two of the Flamewinds trilogy and then this one. But he is referred to in those three issues a time or two as being dwarf-like. So we're going to assume that this skeleton is his. It also mentions that the other skeleton has a scar in the skull of the skeleton that runs the length of the skull's left side past the eye socket. And so that would be Kai Sha. So Conan, knowing now that Bortai is dead and that there's nothing else left for him to do, leaves.
Let's ride!
He just turns around and walks out of the city of Kai Sha, hoping, not Kai Sha, that was the name of the bandit leader, Kara. Karashur, the lost city of Karashur. He walks out of the lost city. He walks out of the lost city of Karashur, hoping that one of the camels is still out there somewhere. That way he has a chance of making it back to Agrippur. Otherwise, he'll probably die there in the desert. And then there is a bit here at the end, this very last panel, I'm going to read you the text on how this ends, the narration.
If he is fortunate enough to find one of the camels which the brigands drove away, Conan will live to drink again in the taverns of far-off Agrippur. And if he drinks deep enough and long enough, one day some drunkard will speak in hushed whispers of the dead city called Kara Shur and of the priceless Azure Eye that lies there waiting. But it won't be Conan.
And then we get a Finis, if that's how you pronounce it, F-I-N-I-S. And at the bottom of the page, we're told next, beware the Hyrcanians bearing gifts. Dun, dun, dun. I really enjoyed this issue. This was a fun issue. This was one of those that is like, I guess the neurodivergent part of my brain that reads a story like this and has to wonder what the point is, because really at the end of the day, Conan didn't do anything. He didn't save the day. He didn't kill the monster. He didn't come away with the treasure. They go into a city. There's treasure there. Everybody, or at least the one person in the story that Conan actually cared about, died. And the monster is still there. He didn't kill the monster. He didn't get away. He didn't win, basically. And that's, I don't know, one of the reasons I kind of like this story and stories like this is that Conan's not always going to win. And that's just the way it's going to be. Conan's going to lose. Conan's not going to be the one to save the day. People are going to die around him. People have died around him. And there's nothing that Conan can do about it except for just walk away, hope that he can make it to Agrippur alive, and just keep living his life. And good issue, good story, great, great, great art. I mean, John Buscema is just, this one, I think, was, I don't know, he's just kicking it, knocking it out of the park. This one might be a little bit better than maybe some of them that have come, you know, beforehand. There are a lot of just panels of just the dumbest things in here, like Conan's face, or, you know, just not action panels, basically, that are just great panels. And that's John Buscema just has that ability to take what would be a very mundane panel of somebody watching something happen and making it one of my favorite panels in an issue. And Ernie Chan, I think previously there was a letters page or a letter in one of the letters page I read from one of the previous issues that talked about Ernie Chan and John Buscema really coming together and making something special. And while that, you know, I have seen that to a certain extent, I don't think it truly, for me, the two of them have come together like they did on this one. I think this, for me, is probably going to be the start of Conan, John Buscema and Ernie Chan, that art team. And then, of course, Glynis Wien on colors. She's doing some amazing things with just four colors in this freaking issue. And she, pretty, pretty good stuff. Used to be married to Lynn Wien, by the way, if that name sounds familiar. But that's all I have to say about Conan the Barbarian, number 35, the Hellspawn of Kara Shur, or Kara Shur, however you want to pronounce it. What about you? You have anything you want to add? Let me know. Send me an email to feedback@hithercameconan.com. And who knows, maybe it'll be part of a future episode. Speaking of which, I just got a question. So this is from, I am probably going to mispronounce your name or the handle you're using. I look at it and I'm seeing Fox Inc. But is it Fox Inc? Fox Inc? Like Foxing, but with a K instead of a G. Fox Inc. It's got a wonderful avatar of Bugs Bunny. A drunken Bugs Bunny. Anyway, they ask,
what do you think about the new Conan comics?
That is a great question. I'm very behind, actually. I had been keeping up with them, and actually the first 8 issues of the new series. If you haven't listened to all the episodes of Hither Came Conan, go back. You'll find at least 8 episodes covering the first 8 issues of the new Titan Conan book. I'm really digging it. Jim Zub, I think, really knows Conan on a level that maybe some writers don't. Some writers who have tackled Conan in the past. But I kind of fell behind. I read past the 8 issues that I did episodes on. I read, I think, the following four issues, because he's been doing them in four-issue chunks. Each storyline has been about four issues long. And the final four issues I read, I'm pretty sure were 9, 10, 11, and 12, which told the story of the Frost Giant's daughter, which if you have listened to all the previous episodes, you know my feelings about the Frost Giant's daughter. Not a big fan. And while I do think so far of all the adaptations, the comic book adaptations of the Frost Giant's daughter, I do think Jim Subs is the best. Doesn't mean it's something I thoroughly enjoy. Let's just put it that way. So I kind of got stuck after that with the whole, there was a crossover event going on, the Serpent Crown or something like that. And, you know, it brought in some of the other Robert E. Howard characters. And I kind of got stuck on that. And I just haven't gotten past it. I need to get back to it. But yeah, up to that point, the new series has been kicking ass. And, you know, I think we're about to get issue 25 at this point. That's how far behind I am. I'm hearing nothing but great things about everything that's come after what I've read. So yeah, I need to get back to it. Totally do.
Everybody out!
Next time on Hither Came Conan, our brawny barbarian returns to Agrippur and is immediately promoted to the king's personal guard. But when a stone statue comes to life, threatening the king's very existence, will Conan prove to be the best fit for this new position? Find out next time when we look at Conan the Barbarian number 36, Beware Hyrcanians Bearing Gifts. This was published by Marvel Comics in December of 1973. The synopsis used in this episode was taken from MarvelFandom.com and then altered, twisted, rewritten, and added to by me. My name is Steven. The information used in this episode comes from Wikipedia, along with Mike's Amazing World of Comics at Mike'sAmazingWorld.com and the book Barbarian Life, a literary biography of Conan the Barbarian, Volume 1, by Roy Thomas, which you can get now at SumerianPress.com. And finally, the views and opinions expressed within this episode are mine and mine alone, and do not reflect the official policy or position of Marvel Comics, Roy Thomas, the Howard Estate, Conan, his sword, his steely thews, his many fans and supporters, and especially his god, Krom.
Krom laughs at your four winds.
So until next time, folks, keep your swords close by and never stop treading them jeweled thrones. And as always, be nice to each other. Bye.
I want to thank you for listening to this episode of Hither Came Conan. Questions and comments can be directed to feedback@hithercameconan.com. If you enjoyed the show, you can help to boost our presence online by leaving a rating or review on your favorite podcast app. I also invite you to join our subscription program, Steven or Else Beyond. And in return, you'll get episodes of Hither Came Conan and every other show under the Steven or Else Media umbrella early and ad-free. Check out the link in the show notes, or just go to hithercameconan.com to sign up today. Hither Came Conan is a presentation of Steven or Else Media. For more nerdy content hosted by me, check out somanypodcasts.com. All links will be in the show notes.
They discover a I knew I was going to have trouble with all this alliteration I put in there, but I'm trying again. I'm your host. My name is Steven, and today we travel west from west from Juan Tangri. So I'm thinking of Juan Tangri. That's in my head, and my brain is telling my mouth, don't pronounce it Juan Tangri. Pronounce it Juan Tangri. I don't know which one's correct, but that feels right. But at the same time, my brain is looking at my little script here, and I'm seeing the word from. Travel west from Juan Tangri. And so then, for some reason, that comes out. Travel west from. That's what happened. That's a little peek. It's a little peek right there. So let's try it again. Finding. Good Lord. I've just right away screwed up the synopsis. Conan and Bortai set off once again, but are soon in the middle of a violent snand. Let me tell you what my brain did there. It's sandstorm, and I hate this. This is what I hate about live stream. I'm way too in my head about it because I'm looking at the screen, I'm looking at the screen, looking at myself on the screen, but the camera's way up there. So I don't know if I should be looking at the camera. I'm looking at you. Hey, how's it going? Yeah, I probably shouldn't do that. You'd all just fall in love with me. Anyway, sandstorm is the word. I was, for some reason, thinking snowstorm, so it came out as snandstorm. All right, where were we? Soon they come upon the throne room, where they find, sitting upon the throne, the... boop, 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 ba-doop, boop, 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 ba-doop, ba-doop, boop, ba-doodle-doodle-doop, boop, boop. Sup? Toodle-doodle-doo. This is another cover... This is another cover, penciled by Bill, Jesus, flippity, flip, flap, floop. Stephen can't talk. It was old, they say, when the serpent god Set first slithered up. It was old, they say, when the serpent god Set first slithered. Jesus, flip. Should just stop reading stuff. I think we'd do a lot better if I just stopped reading stuff. It was old, they say, when the serpent god Set first slithered up from out. Oh, jeez. I want to say of. There's no of. Out the stand. Out. Okay, I'm gonna try one more time. And if I can't accomplish it, I'm just not gonna do it again. It was old, they say, when the serpent god first that screwed up. All right. And that's when the music comes on and people go, oh, that music's so cool. Cause I know that's what everybody's doing. I know.
I just don't think I can move through life knowing that a guy named Steven did this to me.
How could you let this happen, Steven?
Your podcast sucks.
Enough talk.
Great Crom.